Welcome to the podcast. It's dedicated to making you a faster cyclist, the Ask a Cycling Coach podcast, presented by Trainer Road. I'm Coach Jonathan Lee, and here with me, as always, is Coach Chad Timmerman.
Hi, everyone.
And our CEO, Nate Pearson.
Hello.
And we're going to answer more of your coaching questions today. You can submit those coaching questions to us at support@trainerroad.com, and we will go through the list of questions that we get and answer as many as we can each week. And we try to pick the ones that are most applicable and or interesting for the audience. So if you submit a question and it doesn't get answered, maybe it's because it doesn't have a wide application. Or maybe it's awesome. We just didn't have a chance to get to it. We'll see.
Yeah, we have a lot of questions.
We get a lot.
Keep submitting them. Just because there's a lot doesn't mean don't submit them.
Yeah, in fact, I noticed that a lot of you guys were submitting them submitting them over and over again, and that doesn't annoy us at all. Like that's good, because sometimes we just can't get to them all, so that's not a bad thing at all. Just don't submit it like multiple times every day, all day. That would be a little extreme, but everything else is good. You can find this podcast on iTunes. You can find it on SoundCloud, on Stitcher. You can leave reviews for us there, and we would appreciate it. And on SoundCloud, you can also leave time-stamped comments. You can leave a comment tied into a certain point in the podcast, which is pretty cool. So you can check that out. And please share the podcast with others. I'm sure there are a lot of people with questions, and they're probably going to get answered just by listening to this, but it could give them the chance to get an answer anyway. You can also find this podcast. We're putting up a new webpage where you'll be able to submit your questions. And I believe it's going to be /podcast. Is that right, Nate? I think so.
Yes, but it's...
I think so.
Still waiting for us all to get together and take a picture.
Yeah, it's on its way. Yeah. So,
Things tech, you get really close and then something happens and you're not so close anymore, but it's pretty close.
By the time you guys are listening to this, it'll probably be up or very close to
Jonathan.
Being up. So I'm going to put a deadline on it.
Jonathan's making promises he can't keep.
We're close. So perfect. I think we should just get straight into it this week with Amy Joe's question. And this is a funny one. You guys might remember Rod. He called himself a couch potato, but aspiring new cyclist. Anyways, I invited him out to come ride a Grand Fondo out here. I said I'd plan a route and even pay for his hotel if he came out to Reno. So his wife followed up. Here's what she says. She says, "Hello, my name is Amy Joe, and I'm the wife of Rod, the self-described couch potato aspiring new cyclist. He was so pumped to hear you answer his question on the podcast. Thank you for offering to ride with him in Lake Tahoe. He's totally stoked. Now here's my question. He's so inspired that he now wants to shave his legs. He believes that shaving his legs will give him an advantage. So far, he only rides indoors on his trainer in his office. He thinks the fan is providing a lot of wind resistance and shaving will help. I want to be supportive, but shaving seems extreme at this point. 15 years ago when we did our first try together, he shaved his legs, his arms, and his head. I think he's just looking for a reason to shave again. I thought shaving was common among top athletes and not weekend warriors, aka just guys that train inside. But do you have any advice? Do you think we need marriage counseling? Will this help my aspiring athlete? Even if it just gives him a mental edge or sense of belonging with pro athletes, should I give him the thumbs up? I truly am proud of him for getting back into cycling. He's loving Trainer Road. He's committed to improving. I'm so proud of him. Thanks for the support, Amy Joe." I hope Amy Joe can get on the training wagon there with Trainer Road too. That'd be pretty cool. So shaving, guys. It's in the news right now.
Amy Joe, as you, your last little comment there, even if it just gives him a mental edge or sense of belonging, I think that's probably going to be the number one reason behind this, especially if he's training indoors. Wind resistance indoors, even if it's a fan, isn't going to make any measurable effect. and in terms of riding outdoors, I think, and I can only talk for myself, but I think most of us are on board with, we've acknowledged the fact that it's not so much about aerodynamics, although Jonathan can definitely speak to that with the specialized wind tunnel. There is something behind that, but I think the real benefit is basically bouncing back from crashes. Road rash heals so much more quickly when you have smooth legs. So that's always been my main goal, that, and I got to say, I do like to look like everybody else. I don't want to be the guy who stands out with hairy legs, and my legs get quite hairy. So I get it from that aspect, but indoor training and wind resistance don't really go together.
So there is science behind this, right? So when you're outside, Specialized built a wind tunnel, and it's a wind tunnel made for cycling at low speeds. And they did a test, and a guy that wasn't even extremely hairy, just pretty hairy, over 40K, they estimated he would have saved 79 seconds having shaved legs. That's 15 watts. So if you can imagine having 15 more watts, that's crazy. And that article, because everyone always used to say, oh, it didn't matter, didn't matter, didn't matter. And as a triathlete, I always used to, it was a pain in the butt to shave your legs. I never shaved my legs. And I have lost, like, you know, I lost to a friend a 5-hour half Ironman by 15 seconds. And I didn't have shaved legs. And I know I would have won if I would have shaved my legs. arms were a little bit, a couple watts, I think, but not as much. Mm-hmm. And I don't have very hairy arms. But that was, I think that was for a TT. I think I read about Jordan Rapp. He shaved his arms just for a couple watts. But when I'm racing a triathlon and I'm going for, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 hours, depending on the race, having extra 2 watts, I still like that because you feel that at the end. The other thing with the mental advantage, swimmers do this, is it's called save the shave, is they don't shave their legs until right like the night before a race, because they want the feel and have that mental advantage. So it is faster swimming to have shaved legs, but when they swim, they want to have that feeling that they're super slippery. Fast and pro. Yeah, it's this mental thing. It's like you're set. It's kind of like putting race wheels on. You're like, oh, I'm going to be so much faster.
Yep.
What do you think, Jonathan?
Yeah, I'm on the same boat. In fact, Nate and I were just talking about this on our ride this weekend. I just got these fancy new wheels from Envy. They're beautiful. They're gorgeous for my mountain bike. And even though Envy's always says, like, we don't have race day wheels, we make everyday wheels, I'm still going to run them as race day wheels because I want that effect. You know, when you get on race day and your bike is lighter and you feel faster and everything else. And there's a big mental component to that, even if the physical component isn't tangible. Now, I'm looking at the Tirreno Adriatico, and forgive the voice, I'm obviously a little under the weather, so I'll try to keep the clearing to a minimum. But I'm looking at the Tirreno Adriatico from this year. It just happened, and Greg Van Avermaet beat Peter Sagan. And Peter Sagan, he's the world champ. I think he's got a lot of pressure. This is my theory. And he's not shaving his legs. You know, he always likes to stand out a bit. And he wasn't shaving his legs. He was keeping them hairy. And, like, the cycling media was losing its mind about it, right? I even heard it on NPR, which, for those that aren't in the States here, that's National Public Radio. I even heard them talking about it. Like, it made huge news that he wasn't shaving his legs. And he lost the Tirreno Adriatico by 1 second. So he got second place by 1 second. Now, I think he shaved for the TT, which is a good time to do it. But before then, you know, he could have been saving watts every day going into that. So that's just food for thought. It is worth it in that respect. And then on my side of things, Amy Jo, I'll just be open here. I'm not going to blame it on aerodynamics for myself. I'm as vain as it gets. I like the feeling and the look. So I shave my arms and I shave my legs.
Agreed.
And you know what? I like the look of it. I like the feel of it, and my wife doesn't mind. If my wife minded, I probably would change it, but she doesn't mind. So
my girlfriend actually minds when I don't shave my legs.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So that's what I think. Like, so before this specialized wind tunnel, there was like science to make it faster, and everyone thought it was like 1 watt or less. In forums, everyone talks about, oh, massages feel so much better. I'm like, how often are you getting a massage? And then they say crashing, yeah. And they're like, I crash once every 3 years, or you know what I mean. I think that the main reason guys shave their legs is because it makes your legs look more muscular, especially if you're vascular. It can make your legs look like twice the size, and it makes it's more of a mental thing, and you look buffer.
And besides, once you get used to it, it's really hard to go back to hairy legs.
It is. It's true.
It ruined me. In college, a little side story, I used to live in this house with 10 bedrooms. It was me and this other guy, and I had 8 beautiful women living with me. It was like used to be a frat house or something. Anyways, really fun place. I shaved my legs once, and all 8 girls said, oh, you look like a girl. You look like a girl. It looks horrible. And so instead of getting the positive feedback of like maybe in the cycling community, this was outside the cycling community. And my wife hates it too now when I shave my legs. But they all said, oh, that looks horrible. But I mean, I agree with you. When there's a dude with like veins all up and down his calves and stuff, he just looks stronger than a dude with hairy legs like every time.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I think you should just support him. If he wants to shave his legs, just let him shave his legs. And you should go hairy.
Yeah. Agreed, Amy Jo. And he's going to be a spectacle anyway. He's a cyclist, so he's going to have weird tan lines. He's going to have a bigger lower body than he does an upper body. He's going to be a spectacle anyway. So if you're worried about him standing out and looking strange in public, that ship has sailed. So no offense, by the way, Rod. Not saying that you're exceptional. I'm in the same boat. I go to the beach and it's like, what in the world has happened? Those tan lines. So they still think I'm wearing a t-shirt. So, all right. Stacy's question is next. And she requests that I say this in a Southern accent. So howdy, y'all. I don't even know. I hope that's a Southern accent. So I'm a second year road rider and have also dabbled in mountain biking. Current FTP is 240 and I love your training plans. I'm currently in week 4 of Sweet Spot Base Volume 1 and have found it to be extremely beneficial to better my speed and technique. However, my boyfriend and I will be doing the Mohican 100, which is a 100-mile endurance race in Ohio. And I think this is a mountain bike race. I'm not sure, though. I'm a little nervous because my longest ride was 63 miles. But I have an athletic background as a jiu-jitsu practitioner and a brief stint as an MMA fighter and a go-getter mentality. And now you know why we're answering her question, because I don't want her to beat me up.
We're a little afraid.
Yeah. She says, did I mention I'm 36? Please help me determine what plan is going to help me get through this race. I'm prone to road bikes, but I love my mountain bike. I'm just not as skilled as I would like to be in the woods. Spending time at Ray's indoor mountain bike park has shown me I have much to learn. Are there certain techniques that you could advise that will help me get through this race? I'm assuming cardio and endurance are going to be key, but I know there is much more to learn. I never give up, I do not plan on starting now, and I only see growth in every endeavor.
Yeah, so that I looked it up. That race is a mountain bike race, so 100-mile mountain bike race. Ooh. That's funny. Just that's before the podcast, to clear Jonathan's voice, we were talking about mountain bike skills because I am learning how to mountain bike, and Jonathan is teaching me. So this probably, Jonathan, do you want to start with this one?
Yeah. And then I think, Chad, you can help out with where I'll leave off with this one. I think you can pick up really well because Chad's an experienced mountain bike racer as well. And you've also had a lot of experience with a lot of different types of training, with training the body outside of just simply turning pedals. So
true.
Stacy, the first thing I would say is that you spending time at Ray's indoor mountain bike park is really good. It's kind of a high tension situation because it's going to have logs and ladders and different things like that to ride where everybody can see you, and that puts a lot of pressure on you. So if you can do well in that environment, then you'll do really well on race day. Because chances are on race day, when you go up to some type of a tricky obstacle, it's not that other people will be watching, even though they may, but there's another racer right behind you, and that puts a lot of pressure on you. So that's a great way to do it. I think that building your confidence in knowing how your bike will react to certain things is key, and that's more or less what we were talking about with Nate. There's a lot of technique to learn, and for that, I'd recommend Googling Fabien Barrel. That's F-A-B-I-E-N, and then his last name is B-A-R-E-L. He's an enduro racer who actually just retired this year. He was a downhill racer for years before that. He's an incredible rider, and he has these videos that have really good instructions on body position and technique. They're the best ones I've found online, and I would recommend checking those out. And those will really help with the technique side of things. And then on the training side of things, there's something called, I think it's No Shortcuts, and it's this video series with Nino Schurter. He's the best cross-country mountain biker in the world. And it shows all the training he does. And Chad, this is where I'm interested in hearing your feedback. So he does a lot of stuff with like those Bosus, and he does a lot of stuff that's not necessarily heavy weight, but he's having to undergo movements while balancing. And that kind of makes a lot of sense when you think about a mountain bike. He's having to put out power out of the saddle while maintaining traction on off cambers, over bumps, and everything else. Yeah. Have you used those before, or how do you recommend that you use?
So he's practicing, you know, improving his proprioception, relating, you know, where his body is in space, and dynamic stabilization, which when it comes to mountain biking, cycling in general, but certainly mountain biking, especially mountain biking, it just improves your balance, improves the way your body works as a unit. And then, of course, works with the bike. So I think it's a great way to go. It doesn't do much to cultivate strength. I mean, it can have an effect depending on how you apply it to core strength, and that's always useful. But in terms of strength gains, that's not going to happen. But As far as improving his technical abilities, I think that's a terrific way to go.
And Nate, maybe there are some different techniques, because I know you were asking me questions, and since I don't exactly know the course on the Mohican and exactly what it's like, maybe you can just pick a few things that you would like advice on, and then we can talk about those.
Yeah. So I'm like brand new to mountain biking, and I'm a weenie on downhills anyways. And I have a fat bike with a dropper post, which is nice because I can get a little bit lower and I have big fat tires to grip in on the cornering. One thing though that I noticed in that, is it Fabian or Fabian? What was it?
Fabian. Mm-hmm.
Fabian video is, he has an exercise where he kind of leans the bike, but his body stays up and he puts his elbow up. And Jonathan, you were saying you used to do that before your races in motocross. Mm-hmm. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. So before I would race and get up to the gate and everything for motocross, and I still do this with mountain biking, but before I would go up to the gate, I would do these tight little figure eight drills where I would lean the bike, keep my upper body upright. Now you do this by just simply, instead of turning your handlebars intentionally, essentially all you're doing is you're taking if you're going to turn to the left, that means that your left hand is going to be lower than your right, if you can think through that with me. So essentially you just take that right hand and you push the handlebars down towards the ground, but you keep your body upright and you're off the saddle at this point. Hopefully that's understood. And what you're trying to do is kind of disconnect. If you look at a skier when he's skiing downhill, you'll notice that his legs are laid out, but his upper body is more upright. And what they're trying to do is they're trying to actually push weight and keep that weight balanced on the ski, because if they lean inside, then the weight comes off the skis and the distribution's back towards their upper body. And on a bike, it's the same theory. You're trying to keep your body as centralized over the bike as possible when it's leaning, so that way you're pushing the tires into the ground instead of leaning your body into the turn. Another very different from what a street motor, like you'll see like a MotoGP rider leaning his body off on the inside. Totally the opposite of what you want to do on a mountain bike. You want to be riding like a dirt bike rider instead, where the bike is leaning, but your body is upright.
Another thing that I've read about, and Jonathan, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's before I started getting into the technique side of stuff, I would just ride. And one thing that I'm always trying to concentrate on is putting equal pressure on both tires. And that can sound like when you're climbing or when you're descending. Like when you're climbing, it's easy to put too much pressure on the rear. When you're descending, actually too much on the rear then too. It's hard to get it evenly balanced. Is that something that... Tell me about that.
Yeah, so I think that weighting the front tire is something that people, first of all, when you're going downhill and you get scared or you go through anything technical, your natural reaction is to put your weight further back, which is not necessarily a bad thing in every case. You want to have but you just don't want to be static. You want your body to be disconnected from the bike so that you can move that weight wherever you need it at a certain time. And I think there's this certain hesitation to always stay off the front wheel, because we don't want to go over the bars, because that's like our worst fear for some reason with riding is going over the front. When actually, I think you'll surprise yourself many times when you go over the bars, you can actually step right out of it and it ends up okay. It sounds crazy, but it's not the worst thing in the world. So weighting the front tire in turns is absolutely key. And weighting your front tire when you're going, or making sure that you're not leaned one way in the direct or too far front or too far back when you're going through anything that's technical is going to be key as well, because that weight's going to have to move to maintain momentum and traction. So yeah, there's a bunch of different tips like that. Yeah.
So Stacy, the one thing that I'm going to do to like kind of up my technique is I'm going to have some parking lot or maybe some like grass time where I'm going to practice those drills, those little turning drills. And then another thing that I don't feel comfortable with yet, which I watched Jonathan just and this other guy, Ian, who works at Trainer Road, like play with their bikes, is they can like bunny hop and pop wheelies, and they can do this thing. I'm not sure what it's called, but it's where they pop their rear tire and kind of make it go back and forth. Not that I'm going to do this during a race, but it just makes me, I want to feel like connected with my bike and that I can do whatever I want to it. And it's more like a part of me rather than it's this big scary thing that I'm like riding and I'm just turning the pedals.
Yeah. Art Cyclery actually put out a video on that, on like mountain bike skills you need to learn. And the guy that's riding there, his name's Eric Storrs. And he looks like this unassuming guy, like a really nice little, he's like one of the best motorcycle trials riders in the world. And he's incredible on a bicycle too. So check that out. That'll give you some skills to do. And one really easy one that I do, Stacy, is my wife and I, we walk our dogs every night. And when we walk our dogs, sometimes I take my bike, and on our curbs, at least on the sidewalk, there's a curb, or on the edge of the curb, there's always like a narrow passage. It's kind of like there's a whole slab of concrete and then there's the curb. And the curb is no wider than about 6 inches. And what I'll do is I'll just pedal my bike so that I'm riding on that as long as I can. And if I fall off, then I just wait until the next time that I can get back on. And I just practice that while I'm carrying on the conversation or whatever else, going very slowly. And just doing little things like that, maximizing your time on the bicycle, not necessarily training your power, but just training your comfortable or your familiarity with the bike and how it behaves. And that type of stuff really adds up. So, I mean, that's how Ian, one of our employees, he rides mountain bike trails that people have to get off and on walk on. He rides them on a unicycle. He's incredible. So that's, and it's just because he has so much time playing on a bike. And it really does. It's weird for adults to do that, I know, but it pays off.
Yeah,
so.
How old? Ian's like 19 or something. I went mountain biking with the first time, and he like, I'm 34 and I have little kids, and my heart was like, I want to be like, Ian, get down from there. Because there any log or anything, he would go up and then be like, I'm going to go pop a wheelie and go one wheel across this log, and there's going to be a big like 20-foot drop. I'm like, what are you doing, Ian? Stop it.
He's crazy. He's crazy. Yeah, he's really good. He's crazy. So.
Don't, so that I mean, would be Stacey, my, you don't need to do advice. That.
But. Yeah, that's my advice, Stacey, is to have fun with the bike. Spend as much time as you can on it. You're familiar with MMA and jiu-jitsu, so I assume you have a good amount of time in the gym. So those type of balance exercises where you're building strength like that can really pay off with mountain biking as well. Also, it's a 100-mile race. Save your energy. Whenever you see a line, take the most efficient line, and it's going to pay off at the end of the day. So. All right. Neil, he says, I was interested in Chad's blog post on how to program your body to burn fat instead of store it with fasted training. And for those that didn't see that, that was in our on our blog just last week or 2 weeks ago. Forgive me. He says, for rides that are long anaerobic efforts, like a 24-hour mountain bike race.
Aerobic.
Aerobic.
Oh, yes. Forgive me. Aerobic efforts. Do you have any fueling strategy tips for during the event to utilize fat instead of carbs? Do you want to answer that part first, or do you want to keep going?
Yeah, let's do that first. So you're not looking to, and I am skipping ahead a little bit, you're not looking to ingest fat, so we're not looking to substitute fat for your energy bars. Rather, intensity is going to dictate what your body, what energy stores your body draws from. So with something that's as long and aerobic as a 24-hour mountain bike event, it's kind of going to handle itself. I mean, there's going to be plenty of effort within that where you're definitely going to metabolize sugar, and there's going to be some sugar contribution the entire time, which will have to be replenished. But as long as you keep the effort low enough, your predominant fuel source is going to be fat. So it'll kind of handle itself. There's certainly a big influence or a factor that has to be considered, you know, how metabolically... You know, what's your preference? I mean, do you hit sugar often, frequently, big doses of it, in which case you might be a little insulin resistant. You might, you know, favor carbs over fat way more so than a person who has a stricter diet, if you will. So the diet that you're maintaining right now will have an effect on your racing. But if you keep the intensity low enough, you can assure yourself that you're going to be primarily metabolizing fat for fuel.
Mm. And that's going to be tough on a 24-hour mountain bike race because there are going to be spikes, right, Chad? I mean,
yeah, mountain biking, there's plenty of anaerobic efforts. So you're obviously going to have to routinely dose your system with carbohydrate. And that's kind of where the rest of this question goes. So let's talk about that in a minute.
Cool. Yeah, he says, if I'm disciplined with micro feeding, I do well on carbs. But on days when I'm not so disciplined, I bounce between almost bonking, taking some gel, then going well for a while, and then cycling. And then I assume he's just talking about, and then repeating the same process. I'd ideally like to do this type of ride without pumping myself full of sugar. I've looked at super starches, but it is very expensive to use in training and an event. I guess my questions are, what are good fuel sources? Also, Chad mentions carbs in your body are like blood to a shark. We'll go straight for that first. To what extent can your body swap between the two fuel sources during long aerobic efforts?
Yeah, so if you prefer things that aren't sugar-laden, and first, like I mentioned earlier, you have to address this off the bike as well. You can't have a really sugar-intensive diet and then hop on the bike and expect your metabolism to suddenly be what you want it to be and to prefer fat over sugar. So it kind of has to start there. Once you're on the bike, you've mentioned superstarch, and I think you can... is the maker of that. It's expensive stuff. There's no doubt about it, but it is a really slow burning carbohydrate. So that's one way to go. Personally, and I'm going to plug one of my cycling team sponsors, but it's not because they're sponsoring us, but it's because it's really good food. Nature's Bakery makes these little fig bars. They make brownies. They're a really good blend of sugar and slower burning carbohydrates. It's kind of a 50-50 split. And all their products are non-GMO, cholesterol-free, dairy-free, kosher, yada, yada, yada. And they have wheat, whole wheat options, gluten-free options. I mean, they cover all the bases, really palatable. I'll eat these things even when I'm not on the bike.
Yeah, so they're good.
Too much.
And I've found that there's two of them per package. And I think they're like 100, 120 calories each. Actually, I've got one right here.
120 each, I think.
Yeah. So
I have them in my
desk. The brownies are less.
Yep.
And they're very good.
But the dosage is nice. You eat one of those and you're good for, you know, 20, 25 minutes. And like I said, they're really palatable. So I actually look forward to eating them and I keep it consistent, which over the a 24-hour event is super necessary. You can't let that glucose supply or energy supply run down too low at any one point or you're going to pay dearly for it and it's going to last a while and probably have a pretty big impact on your race. So whatever it is,
lots of flavors too.
They do, yeah. So whatever it is, find something that you can tolerate. In this case, for 24 hours of eating every, you know, 20, 25 minutes, however long you determine is necessary for you.
That's really key too. And in Ironmans, is people will set like timers to remind them to eat because it's easy. So you do a swim and you can't eat during the swim. Then you get on the bike and you're probably not going to be hungry for the first hour or so. Or you get through, but you know, people will eat every 30 minutes and then will remind themselves to drink too, because once you get behind, oh man, like you, mm-hmm. it's really hard to get back on track.
It's a long road back. Yeah.
You pretty much can't. And it's, I don't want to say that this is an absolute rule, but if you get far behind, you're not going to recover by the time you finish the ride. You're not going to dig yourself out of that hole.
Well, 24 hours.
Yeah, exactly. You got a lot of time, but you got a lot of time to dig that hole too.
You're basically just going to have to go really slow, Neil. And your last question, to what extent can your body swap between the two fuel sources during long aerobic efforts? It's never really swapping. They're both ever present. So it's just a question of what percentage of sugar to fat you're processing at the moment. And that all goes based on effort. So like I touched on earlier, if you keep the effort low, then you're primarily metabolizing fat. Once you start to ratchet it up, even if briefly, you're going to shift that energy balance to favor sugar.
I see a lot of people talking about kind of like flipping switches with your energy systems and the different things that you take in. And I think of it, instead of flipping switches, I think of it as like valves. And those valves are tapered. They sometimes they're being opened a little more, sometimes they're not being opened as much. And your body is always kind of using a mixture of that. It's just tapering it. Just like when you turn the hot and cold water on and you're trying to find the right temperature, your body's constantly adjusting those dials to get what it needs. So it's not as if your body, even like when it passes its threshold, it's not like systems shut down, new systems start up. It's a progression that's going on there. So
another thing I've seen people do that, especially on these longer races, and it can be pretty enjoyable, is to train with kind of like real food and totally train before you do this in a race. But peanut butter and jelly sandwich, that's got some fat, some simple sugar, and you make it with whole wheat, some slower burning carbs. There are those Alan Lim rice cakes
Scratch
that you
Labs.
Can make.
I make the Scratch Labs rice cakes. My favorite ones right now are the chicken apple sausage ones. They've got rice, brown sugar, soy sauce, chicken apple sausage, and egg. And
those taste so good.
Oh,
they taste good like the day after you make them, but like 3 days later, oh God, they're not good.
Yeah.
You gotta
recommend
them fresh.
Yeah, I would recommend making it the day before then using them. And it's nice because it's a good balance of, because, well, certain people, forgive me, certain people can't do sweet or can't do savory to a certain degree.
Yeah, sweet
and that's a
all
good
day.
Balance. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's a good balance, I think. But I usually have a balance of fig bars, and then I like their gluten-free ones. I'm not gluten intolerant, but I seem to process those a little easier. And I like those, and then I always make those little Scratch Labs cakes. Gel is like my worst nightmare. Mm-hmm. Like when I see people open up a pack of gel, I get queasy. It's just gross.
One of my worst memories racing, I was in New Orleans, and it was like, I was doing a half Ironman, and it was super, super hot on the run. And I got a tangerine power bar gel, and I ate it, and it was hot. So it was like 100-degree gel, and it was just the grossest thing I've had in my life. And,
gross.
Normally in triathlons, I can do gels pretty easily, but instead of that, there are some much tastier things than gels out there now. Like for really sweet, I like those waffles, those Honey Stinger waffles.
Honey Stingers? Yeah.
Yeah. And then, but my point is, going back to it, is just that if you're concerned about too much sugar, you can make your own food and reduce the sugar, mm-hmm. and then try that in training and see how you like it. So you can do some slower carbs, and you don't have to spend all that money on super starch or stuff like that. I've seen people like sweet potatoes and that kind of thing too. They just eat, they have it cooked, and they just munch on it, right?
Yeah. And I know I've mentioned this before.
Fuels you.
Yeah. I know Liz Lyles, when I was riding with her, she's, for those that don't know, she's a killer triathlete, one of the best female triathletes in the world. And, when I was riding with her, we stopped by a gas station on a really long ride, and she got a Gatorade, and I was like, you're crazy, because I mean, she's a pro athlete. She needs to have some type of cycling branded mix, right? Like, that's what you think in your mind. And she was like, well, this is what I have to drink on race day. This is Gatorade has a contract with Ironman, so therefore I have to drink this stuff. That's what's at the feed stations when I'm running. And I thought about that. That's a really smart thing to do. So in your case, Neil, if you're preparing for a specific event, if you know by chance or have a way of finding out what they're going to have at the feed stations, have it there. I mean, a lot of places have potato chips. And potato chips aren't necessarily a bad thing for your body. It's fats and salts, and it depends on how your body responds to it. But those type of things, if you can train your body to work on those things in training, like what Nate was saying, that can really be beneficial come race day.
That's a huge thing in triathlon, is that depending on the race and who the sponsor is, there'll be different bars. Like Bonk Breaker was sponsoring Ironman. I'm not sure if they are still, but the triathletes, because they can get them at the aid stations, they will only train with that, because you don't want to show up a race day and have completely different food, or people will carry a whole bunch of stuff. I know we're getting off the top of the question, but one thing that I love running instead of gels is flat Coke. And Ironman will have this at the race, well, some races. And it's just caffeine, simple sugar, and some salt. And I will just drink flat Coke and water. And they're little Dixie cups. So every mile or so, there'll be one of those, and I'll just do a little bit of that. That has been the best run. I've done cycling. I don't feel as good, but running, I think it's because it's probably harder for me to eat solid food running. Just drinking some flat Coke, I love it.
Then you can just tell everybody, too, when you're drinking a lot of Coke, that you're training, right? You can get away with it. one other thing that I'm loving right now is Picky Bars. I don't know if you guys have had those, but Jesse Thomas, that triathlete, started the company. And holy cow, they are delicious. They're really good. They have this one called Fudge Nuts, and it tastes like you're eating really delicious fudge. So I've only used them when I've been riding a couple times. They didn't do me wrong, and I have a picky stomach, but those things are good too. So hopefully that gives you the info you need, Neil. Todd, hello. I'm really enjoying the podcast. Keep up the awesome work. The recent shows regarding fasting training have been very informative to me. I've been very sugar dependent for the past few years, using gels before and during most of my outdoor rides and races. I just completed Sweet Spot Base and have made an effort to abstain from the gels except for my FTP test. So this is in a similar vein as the last question, but more specific. He says, speaking of FTP tests, is it okay to use a gel before these test efforts? Is it okay to use them during the actual start of a race? Or he says before the actual start of a race. I was wondering if you guys could share some of your race day fueling strategies. Thanks so much for all the great information. So what about when it applies to FTP tests or racing, Chad?
Yeah, Todd, both those are instances where you want to go into them fully fueled. So doing a gel beforehand is not a bad idea, especially if you think you might be a little glycogen low. When it comes to the timing of those, I wouldn't do it any more than 30 minutes out. Excuse me. And the reason for that is when you basically dose your system with sugar, you get an insulin response. The insulin wants to pull the blood out of your sugar. Then you start your bike race and your muscles are trying to pull the blood out of the sugar. You get a sugar low. And that can happen at the beginning of your FTP test. It can happen at the beginning of a race. And not only is it mildly debilitating, but it does nothing for your confidence when you're just starting this endeavor and you've got this low, you know, lightheaded, low blood sugar sort of feeling. But if you ingest it inside of a shorter window, I always time mine 15 minutes out from a race. I take a little gel with some caffeine in it. The caffeine helps the sugar uptake take place just a little bit quicker, and I'm good to go.
Yeah, so what do you guys do? This is interesting, actually, Chad, because I'm doing my FTP test tomorrow, and I think I'm going to eat a little bit more carbs. I usually don't have any carbs for breakfast, but I'm going to eat some carbs, probably do a fig bar like 30 minutes before, mm-hmm. and then actually drink Gatorade during my test. And I don't usually drink Gatorade. Well, because listen to you, Chad, I haven't done any of my training with Gatorade, and I feel like it gives you a mental boost. I remember, too, reading a study where just putting something sweet in your mouth actually
improves people's... Yeah, the mouth rinse.
Yeah.
They've had research that supported that and refuted it, but the fact of the matter is if it motivates you, use it.
Yeah,
I don't know that I would want a belly full of sugar. So like if you've done your first 8-minute test, and then I wouldn't gulp down a bunch of Gatorade prior to that second 8-minute test, but sipping on it the whole time and making sure that your glycogen stays topped off and you don't ever hit a sugar low is not the worst thing.
What do you guys do before race day for food? Like leading up to the race?
Yeah, so I make sure that I eat my breakfast 2.5 hours prior to race start. No more, no less. That's what I've found. Usually it seems, Chad, kind of like a 2 to 3 hour window for most people, right, for their food to settle.
Yeah, depending on the composition of the meal. If it's high fat or high fiber, which neither of which I'd recommend, but if it is, you're going to have to give it a longer digestion window, more like 4 or 5 hours.
Mm-hmm. So I generally have a breakfast before then, and the breakfast is pretty straightforward. I have some scrambled eggs, and then I'll have something like I'll have some oatmeal with some honey, maybe a couple berries or something like that, but I try to keep the berries to a minimum. And that's what I start off with. And then 15 minutes before the event, I always take in a banana. That's what I try to do. So anywhere from 30 to 15 minutes before. And that's what I do on race day. Once I'm racing, if I have to fuel, I generally have something like chia seed gel instead of like just a goo or anything else like that. Not goo brand specifically, but just like the actual, the gross almost chocolate frosting
gel
stuff that we all have. Yeah, because chia seed gel is slightly different for those that have used that. That the only reason I use chia seed gel instead is because I've found it to be more gentle on my stomach. It also, I need more of it to get the same amount of caloric consumption out of it. It's not that dense compared to something like a gel, but I'm able to handle it just fine. In fact, at Nationals last year, I had one bottle of water, and then in my other bottle cage, I had a bottle full of chia seed gel, and I just swapped out that bottle of water in the feed zone, and that's all I did there. So, and that helped substantially. So that's what I do. I have my breakfast 2.5 hours before. That's what's worked for my body. I've tested different times before race time. And you can do this with training too to see how that works. And really it's based off of performance and perception. Those two things combining, that's how you can figure that out. Then a banana 15 to 30 minutes before. And then after that, chia seed gel in the race. Chad?
Basically, I just try to eat 3 hours prior to the event. It doesn't. There's nothing much consistent beyond that. I mean, coffee is always part of the picture. That's just a daily thing, and I don't interrupt that come race day. And then what I eat is really varied. Sometimes it's a breakfast burrito. Sometimes at a host house, it's oatmeal and eggs. Sometimes I just grab a couple of whatever race food I brought. As long as I have it in me well before, and I consider the duration of the race, you know, a 90-minute criterium or a 60-minute criterium versus a 3 to 5 hour road race. I know if I have to be loaded up going into it, and it's going to be really hard to eat during it, as in the case of a crit. So, you know, I try to top things off maybe an hour out versus a long road race where I'm not too concerned. I know that I'm going to start eating early in the road race, and I'm going to eat frequently over the course of the road race. And then that just boils down to whatever's in my pockets, you know, which is typically these energy bars.
So I've had problems having to go number two during a race, like in triathlons, and just explosive. It's been horrible. So what I've done to fix that is actually
fiber.
Start the night. Yeah. What?
No fiber. I mean, like a day before, I'd phase out fiber.
It's so what I've done is the night before, I read, I heard on NPR again that astronauts, before they would fly to the moon, they would eat steak and eggs because it's more biolly available and your body would actually digest a larger percent of it and produce more waste. So the night before, I would you know, have steak and eggs and maybe some potatoes, which are low fiber, no skin. And then the morning of, I would have, I like to, triathlons, I almost always have to travel because there's not any triathlons in Reno, and or very few. And I do two like Quaker oatmeal packets because that's really easy, a banana. And then I bring the Starbucks Via, which is like the instant coffee. And I have a cup of coffee because that's always the same. And then I always try to go to the bathroom. It's a little joke I have with one of my friends is three times before you race.
I'm exactly the same. I have to go three times before I'm ready to race.
Yep. It's like you're not ready. So sometimes you have your wetsuit on and then you run to the porta potty and take it off and go. Two other things that I do is I've only done it for one race, is take Imodium AD, which is like stops you from going to the bathroom. And that I didn't have to go. Like doing all those things with Imodium, and I was good during the race. The other thing that I do is I'll actually take caffeine pills for big triathlons, and I'll take like 600 milligrams 15 to 30 minutes before the race, and you'll feel horrible after the race, but during the race, like caffeine is proven to lower your RPE and you'll perform better. It's so much proven that in the Olympics, if you have too much caffeine in you, it's considered doping. And that's how you know if it's... So if you try to do a supplement, you know it's good if it's banned. I mean, this is only like small amounts of caffeine is not banned. And maybe 600 is too much. It's like two no-dose pills. So maybe that's 400 milligrams. Kind of the same that you would get in a very large coffee from Starbucks. But it does help. And there's lots of... Chad, back me up here. There's lots of research saying that caffeine lowers RPE and increases your speed.
Yep. It also increases glycogen uptake. So gets the sugar into the muscle cells a little more quickly.
Mm-hmm. And I'm glad we're all examples of very picky people with this. This is good because we get to see all these avenues. Last year, at the start of one of the US Cup mountain bike races, I remember I got there early and I pulled up next to this van, and this guy like with long hair opened up the door of the van, looked like completely hammered still. There were beer cans in the van. He was eating a piece of cold pizza. He pulled out a stove and made biscuits and gravy. And I thought, this guy's going to be really easy to beat. And he beat me. He beat me. So that just shows for some people, they have an iron gut and they're able to process whatever they have. And there's no issues. I still think they're leaving something on the table and they could optimize it more. But I'm glad that we're picky examples because at least we'll give you some good edge cases.
I have an iron gut. So some of the races, we drive from Reno to Folsom, which means I have to get up really early. And on those times, I've raced really well eating a steak and egg burrito from Jack in the Box, which is pretty gross. You guys know about it. It's like 800 calories. It's like 3.5 hours before the race, you know, to get down there on time. But I've done great on that too. I just do the oatmeal thing because a lot of times you'll be staying at a hotel or I'll do an Airbnb. I'll have no car. Like you can't, it's way easier just to bring your food. You don't know what's going to be there or what you can get or if McDonald's or whatever. If you, that's another thing. If you can find something you like at like a chain, like Starbucks or I know McDonald's gets a bad rap, but you can get some eggs at McDonald's and some pancakes or something that are just something that's consistent that you can get anywhere. That's why I do the Quaker. I can get Quaker oatmeal or bring it anywhere I want, and those Starbucks Vias anywhere, and I can get bananas anywhere in the world too.
Yep. Yeah. Good tips. All right. Ivan, he says, hi guys, big fan of your podcast here. Always listen to it right away whenever it comes out. I'm also a big fan of the product. This is my first experience with structured bike training, and in 5 months using your training plans, I saw my FTP go from 192 during my first test to 269 this morning. Good job, Ivan. Holy cow.
Good job.
That's big. Amazing results after not getting any faster or stronger on the bike in the last 2 years of unstructured riding. That's so true.
You're our poster child.
Honest,
it's fantastic.
You're probably trying just as hard. I don't know. Maybe you aren't, but structure honestly just makes such a difference, and you can be this measured with it all.
I think you find out you weren't trying. You thought you were trying before, but then once you get on the trainer and you do real intervals, you're like, oh, this is what trying is.
Yeah. And then during certain weeks, you recognize that this is what resting is. And yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah.
Good. Yeah. Yeah. The new triplans are great too. Now I don't have to think or stress at all about what's coming up next, which is pretty cool. So for those that don't know, we just released the base build and specialty triathlon plans. And they have swim, bike, and run workouts in them. So, all right. He says, now the question. I have my A race, which is Wildflower. That's a sweet race, by the way. For anyone that is trying to pick a race, this one's out in the West Coast, in the Central Coast of California. That place is like heaven, the Central Coast of California, for anyone that hasn't been there. Really cool race.
That's a half distance, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I have my A race. It's a Wildflower, and he's doing the long course, so he'll be doing the half distance, coming up in less than 8 weeks now. And I just started my specialty plan this week. What is the latest in pre-race build-up and or specialty phase that I should read? Or what is the latest in his specialty phase that he should retest his FTP? That's what he wants to know. He says, I just want to make sure I know when that's coming up and when my final FTP test should be, so that way I can calculate my race pace numbers.
Yeah, Ivan, I can't think of any reason to test any more often than that last FTP assessment that kicks off your specialty phase. So there are 8 weeks that follow that, and there is likely to be some increase in FTP over the course of that, but you're going to see evidence of that along the way. The workouts get a little bit longer, a little more demanding. If we also increase FTP along with those increases, I think it might be a little too much. Not to mention, your fitness is peaking. We're not really looking to stress the system anymore so much as to prime it and get it ready for race day. And a big component of that is resting you. So I don't know that the amount of increase you would see over that 8 weeks is enough to merit concern. I think you're going to get a feel for it, especially over those longer intervals and those longer rides. And you'll know going into race day what's tolerable and what isn't.
And that Wildflower can be really, really hard and hot. And I don't know, have you guys ever heard of somebody like, when they pick a number for their power meter, picking too low, especially in a triathlon? So Wildflower, you don't know that the run is extremely hard too. It's very
really
hilly. Yeah. So, coming in, and so you have your FTP assessed ahead of time, going through the race and really staying, you know, not going too far into the red zone and then nailing your run is probably, you know, it's good advice, especially for that course where the run is extremely hard.
And the run's hard, and the bike isn't exactly easy either. It's got that long section where you're
hard.
Usually seeing headwinds all the way around where it's kind of flat, but then it gets into that steep climb. It's really steep. I think it goes up to like 12% or something at one point. That climb is pretty substantial in there. So like, it's not a straightforward bike course either. It's definitely one that is going to favor a more conservative pacer. But like Chad said, really the goal with our specialty plans, we really build that FTP. You could see gains in every single phase. We really focus on building that during your build phase, which it seems like you've really seen that evidence there, Ivan. But in the specialty phase, it's more like fine tuning the fitness. It's more like sharpening your fitness to function in a certain way, either sharpening it to be just a flat blade or a serrated blade. You know what I mean? Like it's already there. We're just fine tuning it.
That's
so
a good way to put it.
Yeah, I would think that the fitness that he's got that he tests at in the first or at the very beginning of his specialty phase is probably a good FTP to go with, right, Jen?
Yeah, I don't. Like I said, I don't think he needs to worry about it beyond that point.
Cool. The side note: the other thing about Wildflower, those who don't know, you're camping, so you're not staying like you might, but you have to drive really far. You're camping there, so there's all this kind of based on what we talked about before for eating. You can't go get a steak and egg burrito from Jack in the Box. Like it's harder on your body too to over that weekend, and it can be extremely hot. I've done it before in camp there, having to camp, and I actually had a really bad performance there. But you have to take that into account, I think, of your. So this is another reason why just keep your FTP is if you're camping for 2 or 3 days ahead of time and it's extremely hot. And you might not be getting, you know, you're not sleeping in a real bed. That could, you know, and another reason not to have a number that's too high coming into the race. Yeah.
Also, keep in mind, I know last year, Liz Lyles won this thing in the last, like, she won it in the shoot last time, guys. It was amazing. She ran down Heather Jackson and passed her right at the end, which is pretty cool. So, but she said that last year, because of the low level of the lake, that their transition, when they left the water, they had to run, it was something like, I think it was like almost 2 miles out of the water to transition to get onto their bikes. And that was something that wasn't in the course or anything else. It was just something, a last minute change that they did. So keep that in mind. That might be happening this year. I know that up north, we've had a lot of water up here, up in the northern Nevada, northern California area. But central California is still darn dry right now. It's not doing too well. So maybe you'll have the same thing, Ivan. So keep an eye out for that. All right, Lincoln. Hi, guys. I love the work. Congratulations on a great service and highly entertaining and informative podcast. Thanks, Lincoln. I'm coming back from the obligatory break after kids, and I'm rebuilding with the aim for an A race in September. So I'm planning a long way out. It's a cross-country marathon mountain bike race, which I'll use my custom 29 or titanium 29er hardtail on. Sounds like a nice bike. I've had personal coaching before, so lots of periodization and interval work that has gotten me into great aerobic shape. But when it came to the physical demands of riding a hardtail, I feel it let me down at my A races. So this is going to highlight something that we didn't really touch on too much before with the physical stuff, but we can share some examples now. The constant standing and sitting, as well as the upper body demands and single track, really took its toll as it engages different muscles to trainer work. Given I can't ride on these trails often as part of a regular workout, you mentioned that you're in Sydney with technical rough trails and your A race course is 3 hours away in Canberra on flowy, smoother trails, but not smooth enough to just keep you sitting the whole time. What other strength conditioning workout should I do? I'm thinking TRX, as it seems a good way to combine flexibility and strength conditioning. Keen to hear your thoughts, other than ride the dually instead. Dually being dual suspension or front and rear suspension. So that is my first recommendation, Lincoln. I know that it seems you're proud of your custom 29 or titanium 29er hardtail, as you should be, but my goodness, it goes a long ways. And I have a RockShox X-Lock Sprint, or Full Sprint, it's called. Really, all that means is that I have one plunger on my handlebars and it locks out my front and rear. And my bike pedals exactly like a hardtail, or it's very plush and it's a great tip. So let's talk about exercises though, Chad. I mean, I know Chad's dropped into, or you've done a lot of CrossFit stuff, a lot of functional fitness stuff. What type of core work or what type of exercises do you recommend for this type of cycling?
Yeah, you can go about it in so many ways that I'm kind of lost as to what to recommend in particular. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the TRX system. Give it a shot. See if it works for you. I'm a big fan of just regular weight training, but it comes with the added expense, if you will, of extra body mass. I'm actually curious to hear what you, Jonathan, do, and then maybe what Trevor does in this realm.
Yeah. So I know, Trevor does a lot of traditional weight training. So he does a lot of, front squats, back squats, deadlifts, that type of stuff to work on. And what's that? Sorry, Nate.
I said, who's Trevor?
Trevor DeRose. He's forgive us. He's our community manager and he's a professional mountain biker. He races for KTM. He's all over the world right now. I think he's in the U.S. right now, but he's been racing in Cyprus at a stage race all over the place. He's incredibly strong. So he does a lot of that work, and the goal isn't necessarily just to give yourself some nice glutes and quads. The goal there is that he's really trying to isolate or build his core strength and how his body is functioning together under load like that. That's a big key with this is technique. And you'll see a lot of guys. In fact, I remember I went to the gym with one of our employees who's just an absolute big old meathead bro guy. And I went with him and he was lifting huge weight and that was normal in the gym. And then I was just doing a bunch of reps with less weight and everyone looked at me like I was a tiny little bro that probably didn't belong. But I'm all right with it. The goal with, I think, the weight training is, yeah, you can build power with that. But in this case, really what you're trying to do is you're trying to build that core strength. And I do think that weight training can be really beneficial. I use I don't have a TRX system at home. I would love to have one. But what I end up using is, honestly, I use a Bosu and I use exercise ball, and I try to do as many exercises as I can that require me to practice core stability. So everything from having my wife throw a light medicine ball to me while I'm balancing on the BOSU or anything else like that, doing simple core work, like any variation of planks. There's a lot of different variations, and once again, Schroeder has good examples of what I do actually on his stuff. And in addition to that, I also work, I do a good amount of yoga. To be honest, I think I've seen more benefits from doing yoga than anything else regarding the ability to maintain my energy levels in a race. And I don't know, that's completely unscientific. That's just, I started doing yoga and I was doing better. So I haven't isolated it. But yoga has been fantastic for me because it requires a massive amount of strength. So
a thing too to know about Trevor is I think this is the first year he's actually done weightlifting, and he did it only in the off season. I believe he's not doing it anymore. And two, Trevor used to race motocross. Right now, he used to be bigger. Now he's like 124, 125.
He's like 128 pounds. Yeah.
Yeah, 28 pounds. Yeah. But in high school, he held his high school's record for bench press.
It was still does, was it? As far as I know.
What was it? What was it?
It's like 300. I don't know. It's huge.
I think it was over 300. Yeah, it was huge. So yeah. Trevor's he is a special snowflake for that kind of stuff. But what do you guys think too about, because I'm in the same spot. I was mountain biking with Jonathan and my legs were getting tired. Part of that was technique because I was trying to bend my legs too much to try to get low rather than Jonathan told me later. He said, you got to drop your heels to get your weight down and just have a slight bend in your to get your center of gravity down and mm-hmm. get just a slight bend in your knees. What about doing the we advocate in the summer is trainer work during the weekdays, and then if he just goes and rides, I mean, even on his bumpy trails, like, won't that give him the fitness that he needs if he's riding Saturday and Sunday and doing his workouts out on the trails?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely the ideal blend. He focuses solely on conditioning when he's inside, and then he focuses solely on technique when he's outside. And obviously, some conditioning is going to play into that, but that blend is ideal. And when it comes to mountain biking or cyclocross or any of the more technical disciplines of cycling, there has to be a mix of those two.
Mm. Since you're in a spot with technical rough trails, you're going to want to work on hovering, and that's just essentially where your butt is on the saddle, but it's not your weight isn't pressed into the saddle. And that's just essentially, especially since you're on a hardtail, keeping that power down is going to be pretty difficult when you're going through choppy stuff. So you learn to hover. Race day, it's going to be pretty smooth. So that'll put you at an advantage because you'll build a whole lot of strength while being able to put out power like that. So if you do have anything chunky there in Canberra, you'll be able to cut right through it. Another thing with flowy trails, something that I've noticed when you ride on a whole day of flowy trails like that, forgive me, you tend to undergo a lot of G-forces by the end of the day. And it's like just going through a lot of squats, and it really starts to wear you down. And it's not the type of thing that you're going through really jarring rough trail and it's wearing you out that way. It's something that little by little, it starts to wear you down. To be honest, time on the bike, combined with everything else, like what Nate said, time on the bike is going to be your friend there. A lot of the time we talk about how if you follow our training plans and you have a really long event that you're training for, you don't necessarily need to ride. If it's a 10-hour race, you don't need to necessarily ride for 10 hours beforehand. You just train at a certain level beforehand and you'll be all right. But I can say that in this case, Lincoln, because of the demands on your body for mountain biking, if you can put in more time, especially on rough trail like this, it's going to pay off come race day. So hopefully that helps. And just another plug, check out Schroeder's story that he has on that. So that'll do it for this week's podcast, all the questions we've covered there. Thanks for submitting them. And you can find this podcast once again on iTunes, Stitcher, or on SoundCloud. You can find us there, leave us reviews, and submit your questions to support@trainerroad.com. Thanks for joining us, guys. Talk to you next week.
Thanks, everybody.
Bye-bye.